If I was not here this morning, I would be in Colorado Springs at a memorial service for Cliff Potter. Cliff is a young man, a little younger than I am, not too much. But Cliff's mom and dad were very instrumental in the fact that I'm standing here, being here with you this weekend. Bob Potter was in the grocery business in Oklahoma City, Potter's Thrifty Wise on Northeast 23rd Street. He and Yvonne were a young couple, beautiful woman. They got married right out of high school or still in high school. So, and they came to know Christ during the Billy Graham Crusade in Oklahoma City in 1957. They were one of a large number of people in the business community, and Bob was discipled by a young, wiry cowboy named Jack Holt, who worked here at Lost Valley one summer and helped him to get started with the Navigators, Bible study, scripture memory, walking with the Lord. And so Bob and Yvonne wondered, well, what can we do? We don't have any experience. We hadn't been to seminary. And somebody in their church said, well, we could have a Bible study for high school kids. And Bob said, well, I don't know how to teach it yet, but I'll open my home. So they opened their home. And every Saturday night, a group of high school kids would come to their house for Bible study. Bob's verse that he had been impressed with and claimed was Jeremiah 18:1. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. So that's what he used to say. It was at the potter's house that I first met Bob Foster, Sr., when he came to talk to our little group. And that group of people and a group of guys that I got to know who were my age and the first people my age that I ever knew who really were serious about knowing Christ and loving and following Him. So that was a great part of my life. And occasionally you'll see somebody like when, you'll notice this morning when Paul Stanley gets ready to turn to a portion of Scripture, he'll hold his Bible like this, and then he'll turn to it. And the reason for that is because there's a cheat sheet on the page on the side of it. And it's called a ladder, a Bible ladder. And this was I guess it started with Dawson Trotman, and I don't know where he got it. But if somebody could letter just the first letter of the book of the Bible and up and down on the margin, on the end of the page here. So if you wanted to turn to Jeremiah, well, you know, you're there. So anyway, Bob Potter put that ladder on this Bible for me many, many years ago. And Bob was an amazing guy. I won't say he was hyper, but he idled at about 2,500 RPM. And this weekend, I have thought often in the presentations and talking to people and hearing your stories, how incredibly blessed we have been with the people in our lives who poured some of themselves into us so that we could follow the Lord. And, you know, that looking back can be a wonderful exercise. The past is a great place to visit, but it's not a good place to live. Three of the greatest difficulties in life as you get older are neuritis, neuralgia, and nostalgia. And I read something the other day that I thought was great. It said, the past is supposed to be a guidepost, not a hitching post. So we look back, we thank God, we move ahead. I'm going to do a little Bible geography lesson. You have to raise your right hand or your left hand. Okay, here we go. Got to do this. This is hold it up high, and we're going to do the anatomical map of the Holy Land. Okay, you ready? This is the Sea of Galilee. This is the Jordan River. Your armpit is the Dead Sea. Okay, you got that? Let's just keep it in mind. Go along. Some of you, your deodorant's already failed you this morning, I know. And my goal is to get through before your coffee does. So we're going to move along. Under King David and his son Solomon, the 12 tribes of Israel were a united country. It was strong, militarily powerful, it was prosperous, and there was a fair semblance of spiritual rightness and leadership about the whole thing, a fair amount. When Solomon came to the throne and after he died, there was contention between his sons and the country was divided into two kingdoms. 10 tribes of Israel and the northern kingdom called the nation of Israel with its capital in Samaria. 2 tribes in the southern kingdom of Israel, the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, named the nation of Judah with the capital at Jerusalem. The nation of Israel was sent into captivity because of their idolatry and sin a number of years before this came to the southern kingdom. There were prophets in the northern kingdom, bad kings, bad decisions, bad life, idolatry, the whole works. The southern kingdom was where Jeremiah was a prophet. And over the years, there was not just one mass deportation. There were several smaller ones until finally the country fell. One of the deportations is described this way. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles of the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, put it in the treasure house of his God. He ordered the chief of his court officials to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning. I'm not reading from the book of Jeremiah, I'm reading from the book of Daniel. Jeremiah was not alone in following the Lord during these years. There were also other prophets. There were men like Daniel, whose heart was tender toward God and set on following him. But the good was swept away into captivity with the bad. And a lot of the confinements in our lives are not necessarily our fault. They sort of come with the territory of life. And for some people, confinements can start early. Emotional confinements, physical, all kinds of things. I remember when I was teaching junior high at West Junior in Colorado Springs, and a young boy came late to class and was out in the hall, and I went out and he had a note, and he said, "I really kind of feel sick at my stomach." And I said, "Well, go across the hall to the bathroom, and if you feel a little better, come back." And I thought I smelled alcohol on his breath. And I thought, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. That doesn't seem right. The kid's 12, 13 years old. And so he went to the bathroom for a time and came back, and I met him out in the hall. And I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Well, it's not really." He said, "I couldn't find any food to eat in the house this morning, or anything in the house. The only thing that was there was a bottle of homebrew." And so he said, "I drank that because that was all there was. Came to school." I mean, I used to think, you know, man, some of these kids go through more agony before they get to class in the morning than I go through in a month. And these confinements come upon us. We all have plans. We all have hopes. We all have dreams. Many times we have a call from God a calling, a direction. But often there are closed doors. Things change. There's disappointments. There's disasters. And to be confined means to be closed in, to be fenced around. It's the idea that you're constricted. A synonym is to be imprisoned. It's a place we don't want to be, but it's a place that's difficult to get out of. And so when it finally came down during one of these deportations of the southern kingdom, a group of people was sent into exile, and many were still left in Jerusalem. The city hadn't fallen finally as it would. But Jeremiah wrote a letter to this group of exiles that were in Babylon. It begins in Jeremiah 29, verse 4. It says, "This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile." God is saying that. "The king of Babylon didn't carry you into exile. I carried you there from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease." And on one of those mornings when I was sitting there and just reading through the book of Jeremiah, and I came to this and I thought, my goodness. These people are in a place that nobody wants to be. Everybody there wants to get out, and he is saying to them, increase in number. Do not decrease. And it occurred to me that there may be a larger principle here at work in our lives, and that is, from God's perspective, the goal of every confinement in our lives is that we increase and not decrease in the midst of it. Now, he was saying literally to them, don't let the population die out. Because, as we would see later, he says, this is what the Lord says, verse 10, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. But you're going to be there for 70 years. So, while you're there, increase in number, do not decrease. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. One of the things that happened to me in this period of reading through Jeremiah was that I got caught up in the narrative. I got caught up in the story about what was happening, and that was all that I was thinking about. And suddenly, I would come to familiar words that I knew and had heard and had seen before, but I wasn't expecting to find them in that particular place. Because the Lord continues and says, I'm going to bring you back from this place, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. I've heard a lot of sermons on that passage, but it's all been in isolation. Like, this is just, you know, just a blanket statement. But it was made to people in confinement. I've got plans for you. Some of these plans are down the road, and I've given you a brief preview of them. I'm going to get you out, but between now and then, this is what you need to do. Got a letter, I don't know, last summer from a man named Ken Deal in Grand Junction, Colorado. Didn't know him. He's a reader of Our Daily Bread, And what he sent me was something that he's been involved in volunteer prison ministry for many years with the Gideons. And retired Air Force. I talked to him. I said, "What did you do in the Air Force?" And I discovered that he was one of the most popular men in the Air Force when he was in. He said, "I was a paymaster." Anyway, Ken Deal had sent me something that one of the inmates that he meets with had created as a result of reading an article in Our Daily Bread, and we corresponded. And then in December, while I was reading through Jeremiah, I got another letter from him. He said, "Oh, I thought I'd send you this copy of the little sermon." He said, "This is a sermon that I gave last Sunday at the prison, culminating my 35 years of volunteer prison ministry." And the title of his sermon was, "How Can a Person Serve God While Incarcerated?" And I thought, he is talking to a group of people in a place where everybody that's there wants to be out. There's no question about that. "Well, it's time for your parole." "Oh, I think I'll stay here." There's a few who don't know how to live on the outside, and they probably would, maybe rather. Not most people. So what he's saying to these men in prison, you're going to be there. You probably know how long you're going to be there, and while you're there, increase and do not decrease. And I thought, how do we do that? And the only thing I could come up with is that we must have a larger purpose in life than any specific calling or situation. We have to have an overarching purpose in our life that we could carry out no matter what situation we're in. One thing I've always appreciated about the Navigators, Paul, is that they've always known what they were up to. It hasn't been mysterious. And way back in probably maybe in the 40s, their logo was a giant sailing ship with billowing sails, because it blossomed with men in the Navy, the military, during World War II. And beneath this sailing ship was a brief statement long before everybody had to have a mission statement, and it just said simply, "To know Christ and make Him known." That's what they were about. And I thought, what kind of a situation could a person be in where you couldn't do that? What kind of confinement could surround a person where the individual would not be able to know Christ and make Him known? Paul was talking about the Apostle Paul in prison and saying, "Well, I can't, I'm not getting any frequent sailor miles anymore traveling around with the gospel. But hey, when the gospel is preached, I rejoice. I'm here. This is what I can do. I can know Christ and make Him known where I am." The other thing that I have observed is a confinement can also be a doorway. It can be a doorway to the next chapter. And if we are focused on the increase and not the decrease in confinement, then we're open to God's next plan for our lives. If we're trying to grow and not die, if we're trying to serve and not sulk wherever we are, then the next chapter can come. And the other thing that I have seen in the lives of a number of people that I've sort of come to know vicariously by working on these biographical projects about them, is that one person's release is often the creation of another person's confinement. I don't know if you picked up on it last night when Eric Little's daughters were talking about what happened, you know, at the end of the war, and their dad wasn't coming back. And Heather was saying, we went down and we saw all these servicemen coming back and meeting their parents and moms and wives. And she saw this beautiful woman and young man embrace. And she said, I hope my mom doesn't see that, because she's going to feel bad. And it's not fair. It's just not fair. Her dad had been promoted to glory. And, you know, the accolades, the celebration, as it should be. But his promotion and passing, in a sense, created a confinement for his daughters that took years, literally, before, through a series of circumstances, they began to deal with it. And the other thing is that, and I'm going to close with, we're just going to watch a brief video clip, that the book of Jeremiah is followed by the book of Lamentations. This is after the fall of Jerusalem. The city's been destroyed, the temple's been burned, it's been trashed, the people are gone. Jeremiah was never taken into captivity. He was kind of left with a remnant there. And he is walking through the city that has been destroyed. And he's talking about the Lord. He's saying, God has filled me with bitter herbs and sated me with gall. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I had hoped for from the Lord. Surrounded by this physical destruction of what once was the glory of Israel. And in the next breath, he says, I will remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet I call this to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, because his compassions never fail. They're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those who hope in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. And this is a theme all through Jeremiah and Lamentations. In the midst of this chaos and destruction, these words break out because they can't help breaking out. Because they're bigger than the situation, because God is bigger than, and his purposes. And it does not diminish one bit the confinements that we find ourselves in. But yet it does, you know, I appreciated so much, Jolly, your words about seeking the Lord and saying, okay, how do I deal with this? Where do we go from here? How does the torment go away? What steps do I need to take? So the seed of dealing with confinement, the challenge of confinement, who am I listening to? What am I depending on? And where am I going? And what happens if I can't get there? And I want to just close with a brief video clip. Maybe we can catch those curtains over there just for the for this. A great deal is said, written, and known about Oswald Chambers. We read his words often, many of us every morning. And yet, it was his wife who made possible what we read. Chambers never wrote anything. He spoke the words, but he didn't compile them into written form. And it was because of a confinement that Biddy Chambers discovered the next chapter in her life, and I want to just watch this together.